Our Bible reading for today is from the book of Ephesians. I'm going to read from chapter 4, verse 1 to 6. As a prisoner for the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all, through all, and in all. The word of the Lord.
All right. Well, we have been in the last 2 months in a sermon series called Becoming a Peacemaker. So we as a community have been talking about how do we become people who are really good at making peace, people who are really good at resolving conflict in a healthy way. Because we said that's God's desire for the church. God's desire for the church is that despite differences we have, despite conflict that is going to come up because we're different people living on this side of the new heavens and the new earth, God wants us to be one, to get really good at forgiving and reconciling and repaying someone when we do something that hurts them. So we've been in this wonderful series over these last 9 weeks now, 10 weeks. And so today what we're going to do is I had asked 2 weeks ago if there were questions still lingering about peacemaking and relational conflict and all that. So I'm going to answer a few of those questions that I got from that call out. And then I'm going to invite you all to share. We're going to have kind of an open mic just to share. What have you been learning and putting into practice as we walk through this series? Because what I don't want is that this is just a sermon series that we thought, oh, that was nice, how interesting, and then we move on. I want us to continue to work on this. I want us to keep getting better at resolving conflict in a healthy, God-honoring way. And so I think part of how we do that is learning from each other. And so that's what we're going to do after I answer some of these questions. We're just going to have, there's a mic up here. I know some of you probably hate to be in front of people. I'm sorry, but I want our friends at home to be able to see what you're saying. So there's a mic up here, and I'll invite you up in a moment if you have something you'd want to share about what you've been putting into practice over these last couple of months. So I have a few quick questions that I got asked, and then there's a couple that need a little more explanation. So one question I got was about if the solution that's agreed on isn't really a full solution. So basically it sounds like, what if you come to the point where the only solution you can agree on isn't really like fully fixing the problem from your perspective? I would say in that circumstance, you have two options. If the solution isn't, from your view, fully solving the problem, you have two options. One is you can think about and pray about, is this just enough? This isn't everything I wanted. This isn't fully resolved the way I would like it to be, but is this enough? Is this all this person is able to do right now, and can I accept this as enough? And if you decide that, then you move on, right? You say, okay, it's resolved. It wasn't resolved fully how I wanted, but this is where we are, and you work forgiveness and reconciliation and move forward. That's one option. Another option is to advocate, you know what? I don't really think that fully solves the problem. Because I think what happens often is we assume that the other person should know, like, I said this thing bothered me, and the solution doesn't fix that. And we just think that they should know that. But if we don't say out loud, you know, from my perspective, this doesn't really fully solve the problem, then they don't know that you don't feel like it fully solves the problem. So that's kind of what I think the two options are there. Either you say, you know what, I think this is as good as they can do, and I can move on like this, even though it's not fully how I would have wanted it. Or you need to speak up and advocate and go back to problem solving and go back again and figure out how you can solve the problem in a way that addresses both of your interests. So that's question one. Another question was about, is there always a need for forgiveness? If you resolve the conflict, you come to agreement and you move on. Is there always a need for forgiveness? And I'm going to say probably, even if it's little, right? If there was a conflict that you needed to come to resolution on, there was something. And maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe they didn't like betray your trust, but maybe you just had a misunderstanding. It might still be good to verbally say out loud, hey, I'm so glad we resolved this, and I just want to let you know that I'm not going to worry about it anymore. So remember, we talked about the four promises of forgiveness, and it might be good to affirm, I'm not going to talk about this anymore with anyone else. I'm not going to bring it up to anybody. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm not going to use it against you in the future. So even if it was a little thing, even if there's not maybe some deep heartfelt forgiveness that needs to happen because you didn't really feel that hurt by it, it might be good to still affirm the promises of forgiveness that, okay, we've solved this, and I just want to let you know I'm done talking about it. I'm not going to bring it up again. So is there always a need for forgiveness? And another question I got is just, you know, there are sometimes in families really hard situations where you try and try and try, but people in your family are not able, or maybe this could be people at work as well, they're just not able. They're not able to have the reconciliation conversation. Maybe reconciliation is never going to happen the way you hope it would. And at some point, you know, we talked about a couple weeks ago that in that case, if there's issues of like safety that need to be escalated, maybe to involve the law or something, you might need to do that. If it's a relationship that's just not going to mend how you want, at some point you may just have to say, you know what, this isn't healthy for me anymore. Because you can't, right? You can't force the other person's hand. You can do the process yourself. You can go to God. You can get the log out of your own eye. You can gently engage the other person. You can do your best to problem solve and be reconciled. But if at some point they just don't want to participate in that process, then you probably need to draw a boundary. And that's hard, and it's sad. I think I've shared that that was kind of the case with me and my dad for a long time. He was not able to participate in a process of reconciliation. He was not able to face the things that he had done that harmed me and my family. And so I had to draw a line and say, I can't be in relationship with you right now because it's not healthy for me. Those are sad, hard situations. But sometimes you just have to say, you know what, God, I ask God, God, have I done everything I can? And if the answer is yes, okay, maybe it's time to draw a boundary and draw a line. So those are three questions that they're hard, right? It's easy to have four steps of conflict resolution, but it's muddy, right, when we get into actually doing it with real people who don't follow the steps like we think they should. A few other questions I got, I prepared a little bit more to say about them because I think they needed a little more just thought and preparation on them. But one question I got was basically around the way power dynamics affect the peacemaking process. So some of us don't like to talk about the idea of power dynamics, but they do inform every relationship. God desires us, right, to treat each other as brothers and sisters. God desires that we treat each other as equal at the foot of the cross. But that's not reality just yet in our world, right? In our world, still, parents can overpower children. Bosses can bully employees. Women, ethnic minorities, the LGBTQ community, they're all still struggling to be treated full and equal in every arena in our country. And so all of those social realities, they do play a role into how we adjust, how we attempt the peacemaking process. What this means is that in conflict, it's more likely that the more powerful person will be in a position where they don't actually have to try to understand the other person's point of view, right? I don't have to try and understand my child's point of view when we're having conflict. I'm the parent. I make the rules. I can just say, you're grounded, right? Because I'm the more powerful person in that. We can force closure on something. We can say, we're done talking about this. We're moving on. We can enforce our way. I can enforce my outcome that I want with my kids because they're children. And this is why Paul, right, when we read a few weeks ago from Philippians 2, Paul keeps hammering home that we need to give up the advantages of our position. In Paul's day, men had power over women, adults had power over children, masters had power over their slaves and servants. And so he consistently challenged men, adults, masters to humble themselves and treat other people as better than themselves. For Paul, just because society set up these systems and put some people over others doesn't mean it should stay that way in the church. And in our day, right, like I said, it's not that different. Men often still have power over women. Employers have power over their employers. Adults still have power over children. So when you are in conflict, when you're in conflict, it is imperative that in each point in the peacemaking process, you can consider what advantages you have because of your social position. You have to consider and think about what you can give up that you bring in there with you because of your powerful position over the person you are in conflict with. So if you are the boss, if you are the parent, if you are the physically larger, if you are the stronger personality, if you are the leader, and yes, now still, if you are a white person in conflict with a person of color in our country, all of these things might put you in a place where you can intimidate the person that you're in contact, you're in conflict with. And all of those things put you in a place where you need to take special consideration as you walk through the four G's of conflict resolution. Right? So when you go to God, that's step one. When you go to God, you need to ask him to make you aware of anything that might make you intimidating to the person you're in conflict with, because you probably don't see it. Right? I shared a few weeks ago that a volunteer in my ministry asked elders to come meet with us. I thought it was ridiculous. I think I'm a safe person to have conflict with. But she didn't feel that way because of my position. So we need to ask God to help us be humble, to help make us aware of anything that makes us intimidating to the person we're in conflict with. We need to ask him to help us be humble, ask him to help us truly understand the other person, even if because of your position, you don't have to, right? Like I said, I don't have to try and understand my kids. But life in God's kingdom means that I need to value my kids above myself, value their perspectives, look out for their interests as well as my own. So I need to ask God to help me be aware of any way that I'm tempted to just push my agenda, my resolution through without listening to the other person. When you get the log out, right? That's step two, get the log out of your own eye. You need to consider, is there any way in which my position has caused me to act without concern toward the other person? Do you in some way consider the other person less important than you? Does their position make you think less of their opinions and feelings? Is there anything in you that wants to cling to your power so that you can just shove this conflict under the rug and move on? Get the log out. Step three, when you gently engage. If you are in the position of advantage, you'll need to work very, very hard at this step to make it safe for the other person to share their point of view. You'll need to respond with humility. You'll need to ask a lot of questions. You'll need to spend more time understanding their point of view and their interests than you do talking about your own. You need to give up your ability to demonstrate your own desires louder, longer, more successfully than they do when you gently engage. And then when you go and be reconciled, that's step four, you'll need to work hard to make sure that the solution to the problem is actually good for the other person. I know this sounds like, duh, of course we want that, but if you're someone's boss, friends, there's way too much pressure for your employee to just say, yep, that sounds good, even if it's not really good for them. There's so much pressure. And so you're going to need to demonstrate that you really care if they feel good about the solution. You may need to ask them if they want to invite someone else to come into the conversation to help advocate for them so that they feel good about the outcome. You as the person in power, right? So I as a parent, me as a boss, as a leader, I need to demonstrate forgiveness where forgiveness is needed. I need to reassure them often. I will not bring this up again, right? I need to make it clear that I have moved on. You will need to keep your word to move on, to keep your promises of forgiveness. So there, those are just a few quick thoughts I had about the way power impacts peacemaking. But to be a follower of Jesus, right, means to humble ourselves, and especially to those who in our society, because of the way our society is set up, those people we can overpower. I hope that's helpful. So that's peacemaking and power. Another question that came up out of a seminar that we had a parent seminar by Laura Olthoff several weeks ago. This question came up about how can we make it safe to have conflict in the first place, right? Because you have to have some amount of safety in the relationship to begin with for it to feel safe to even go to someone and say, hey, what you said bothered me. Right? You all have a boss or a friend who you're like, oh my gosh, I can't even imagine bringing this up to them because I know they wouldn't react well, right? And it doesn't you know, let us off the hook to go resolve a conflict even when the other person's hard to have conflict with. But man, if you want to have a community, a space, a relational environment that is safe to have conflict, you have to work on that. And so that was one of the things Laura talked about. She said that long before conflict happens, we can be working to make our homes, our workplaces, our neighborhoods, our church here at Harbor a safe relational space so that when conflict occurs, there's already relational safety. People feel more comfortable to engage in healthy conflict resolution. So there were three things that Laura said that I thought were really helpful to create in your home, in your workplace, this safe relational space before conflict occurs. The first thing Laura talked about was rhythms of connection. So rhythms of connection. Long before conflict happens, you can work to create a safe relational space by cultivating these rhythms of connection. So they'll look different based on where you are, at home, your neighborhood, your job, here at Harbor. Maybe at home you schedule a weekly family night just to play games, watch movies, do something together your family enjoys. At the office, maybe you establish like a lunch gathering once a month or some sort of online game that you play together every week. Here at Harbor, our every week gatherings are intended to be that. This thing where we create relational safety with each other. We build relational safety. Our first Sunday fellowships, the first Sunday of every month, we have coffee, we have food. We just hang out and get to know each other. We might play silly icebreaker games sometimes. That's all about beginning to create this safe relational space where we know each other and trust each other. So wherever you have any influence at all, if that's your kids, if that's your family, if you're a boss of 5 employees at work, you have influence and you can do this work ahead of time to create safe relational space. So rhythms of connection is one way to create safe space for conflict. Another thing that Laura talked about was to practice perspective taking. So in conflict, you have to try, right? Healthy conflict resolution requires us to try and see things from the other person's perspective. But it's really hard to practice a new skill like that when you're in the stress of conflict, right? That's hard. And so Laura, our speaker, had made the point that we can practice this ahead of time. We can do this maybe at home over dinner. We can practice this by listening to a song and then asking each person to share something they liked and didn't like about the song. What did you like? What did you not like? At work, maybe practice this by reading a short article together and talk about what each person found helpful and what they still have questions about. And as you listen to each other and these practices of perspective taking, we practice validating each other's perspectives. So even if you don't agree with someone, you can validate their feelings or experiences. Listen, I can understand how you think Boston Pizza is good. I can understand. I don't agree, right? But I can understand that, how you would feel that way. So before you have conflict, practice taking perspectives, listening to other people's perspective. And then the third thing Laura talked about was to practice problem solving together. So this is the same as learning to listen to other people's perspectives. Solving a problem when you're all emotionally invested is hard if you've never done it before. And so practice this ahead of time. Practice it outside of conflict. It's going to be helpful. So with your kids, share a hypothetical situation or maybe a situation their friend is having at home and see how you could solve it. So kids, I have a friend who's trying to decide if they should buy a new car or not. How would you guys make that decision? How would you figure that out? Problem solve together. Hypothetical things where no one's invested. Same thing at work or here in your journey groups. Practice problem solving. Look for opportunities to practice solving problems together outside of conflicts when your emotions are already heightened. This will help. So those are three things. Creating rhythms of connection, practicing taking perspectives, and practicing problem solving that I think can go a long way to creating space where it is safe to have a conflict, and it will make it easier to work through conflicts in a healthy way. And then the last question that came up actually in my journey group was basically, is there a way to prevent conflict? Right, like, is there a way? Like, do we know? Like, are we going to have to keep, like, I know every time we go on vacation, I'm going to have the same argument with my mom over and over and over again, right? When we see conflict coming, do we have to just, like, walk straight into it, be ready with the 4 G's so that we can, like, do it, right? I mean, yes, you could. Or sometimes wise peacemakers figure out how to diffuse a conflict before it even happens. A great example of this in the Bible is Abraham and Lot in Genesis 13. In Genesis 13, we read that Abraham and Lot had both grown very wealthy. They had huge herds of animals, and it was starting to cause arguments between their servants, arguments between their shepherds. And so Abraham, right, sees this potential for ongoing, escalating conflict, and he says, you know, I don't want to have conflict with you. I want us to have a good relationship. There's a better way. You know what? Look at all this land. We don't have to live on the same, you know, few square miles of land. What if we move away from each other so that we have some room to grow? You take which land you want, and I'll take the other part. So we can kind of diffuse. We can avoid the conflict in a healthy way. Not avoid, like, let's just not talk about it. But be wise. look ahead. In the same way, right? When we know that we are prone to having the same issues over and over, or when we see a potential for conflict arising, wise peacemakers don't just have the same conflict over and over and over again. They look for a way to prevent the conflict from continuing to come back around. At our house, we have an issue like this. Every Friday in my family, we do a pizza and movie night. And every Friday, there's an argument about the movie. Every single week. Who gets to pick? What are we watching? I hate that movie. You always get to pick. And suddenly, right, this thing that's supposed to be this beautiful, like, fun family time is just a fight. Every Friday. It took me way too long, but this past week, I realized we don't have to do this every Friday. We can just create a rotation, and every person gets to pick a movie once a month. No more fights! It's decided ahead of time. We don't have to have that fight anymore. So you can consider, too, are there issues in your family, in your workplace, that are likely to repeatedly cause conflict? Are there things that keep coming up over and over? And you can think about, is there a way I could actually diffuse this conflict before it even becomes a big deal? So those are a few questions I got. I hope those answers have been helpful. This has been a really cool season, you guys. I have loved to hear how we are all putting into practice what we're learning together. And I want to just be real, like, clear on this. I'm not a relational expert, okay? I'm learning with you. Your pastor is not some, like, I stand on a podium, but I shouldn't be on a podium, right? Like, we're all learning this together. I'm figuring this out. I'm learning so much from you. So I love my journey group. We get together every week, and I get to hear how others in my group are resolving conflict, and they hold me accountable to resolve conflict in my life well.